Hello. There we go. It doesn't make a noise anymore. That's really annoying. We are live. Hello. This is ABW Radio. Good start. Much like... I'm John. I'll be your host for this evening. It was supposed to be Chris, but he's feigning illness. He's got the I need a winter break flu that Meza apparently developed sometime. Anyway, do not adjust your sets. This is not a repeat. I can promise you we are live. You are not watching something that happened, you know, last year or the year before or the year before that. This is a live show. I promise. It's really happening. Tonight, I am joined by Mr. Ellis, who I see there sipping a nice fine whiskey. How are you, Ellis?
Oh, I'm fine and dandy, to be honest. No, I don't see what could have possibly happened just now to make us all so upset.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. Well, alcohol's not going to your head at all.
No.
I'm also joined by, especially for tonight's show, our blogger extraordinaire, Mr. Drew, who's also our German football expert. So he's going to have a really fun evening. How are you, Drew?
I mean, apart from bathing in my own tears, pretty good. Doing all right.
Oh, fantastic. Well, nice to see lots of people in the chat already live. Hello, everyone, all the regulars in there. I see Danny's in the chat as well, probably winding people up. Thumbs down already. Christ, we've only just started. Unbelievable. So where to start? Well, I really don't know. It was terrible. Oh, look, Chris is too busy trolling Pep. Yeah, you're probably right. Everything, everything. Anyway, I've got to have a little dig because he's not here. We'll start with the lineup for tonight's game. Lots of talk beforehand, people hoping for a three-man midfield to see Alexis up front. We got bits of what we want to see, not everything. No Danny Welbeck from the start. There's a question mark over whether he's fit enough at the moment or not, which is debatable. Obviously, we don't know because he's come back from that long-term injury. But it was two in the middle. Oxlade-Chamberlain was moved from there. No Lucas in the squad at all. Gibbs kept in at left back rather than Monreal coming back in, which was a little bit of a surprise. I think the rest of the team sort of wasn't too much of a shocker. Drew, what did you think of the lineup and the way we set up tonight just before the game kicked off?
Honestly, you know, when you think about it, the only way, I said so before over the last week, you know, the way Bayern play, they're going to have the ball, period. And they're very tough to dispossess when they're you know, doing what they do best. And the only way we could set up is really to not worry about trying to keep possession when we get the ball, is to get the ball, pick our heads up and drive at them at pace. And the spells this match when we were at our best, particularly in the second part of the first half, Alexis gets his goal, you know, which resulted from the penalty kick, but the chance we did create was quick, incisive. We were breaking forward. Alexis would get in behind and use that pace, and that was our only chance. And honestly, I don't really know if this was necessarily the side that could have done it. And someone brought up in the chat before, what's the point of playing Ozil when you're not going to have the ball? And honestly, it's a fair point. You know, even though he played when he was at Real Madrid, he played at the top of a midfield three, and Real Madrid were very direct when he was there, but still they could still possess when necessary. But for a match like this, you know, you just want someone who can maybe pick the ball up and run with it and really use that technical ability to beat players, to get players into foul trouble, to be more incisive. And Ozil, when he's been here, he's been more about possession. And that's not how you're going to beat Bayern, period. And I think it, you know, even though I didn't think we were going to win, I said 3-1. I didn't expect 5-1. And to be honest, even Ozil didn't really turn up bar Alexis. I think it was just all poor. That's just my initial thoughts. I mean, I could probably rant on forever, but there's no point in me being alone ranting. So,
Ellis, what did you? Was there any differences in the lineup you would have liked to see from what was picked tonight? And I think you would have changed.
We. Little over a way, be just because of the sort of engine that Welbeck has and is covering as well. And but other than that, I wouldn't say I was surprised. Like I said, I would have liked to have Welbeck starting, but I wasn't surprised by the lineup because it's the sort of the same sort of thing that Arsene Wenger likes to do. He's not going to change it too much, is he? But no, like Gibbs again, and Monreal's new form was sort of slightly surprised when I saw him. Surprised. Become pretty standard really to play this that sort of team. I know we sort of wanted the changes for a 4-3-3, but it wasn't really going to happen. Ox has sort of played okay in centre mid, but as we saw, he is prone to doing the sort of stuff that he did today when he's played in that position, but that might have been because he's changed from playing out that wide for a whole game and then being moved for 5 minutes into the central positions. But I can't say I was too surprised really, and I thought given the bench that we had, I thought there was options on there to change it. The only sort of player on the bench that I wasn't confident about coming on was the guy who did eventually come on because of an injury.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get to Gabriel and his contributions. You did get a little bit robot-y then, Ellis. I don't know. Are you on your Wi-Fi again? Daniel will get all upset with you.
I am on my Wi-Fi. He's giving me shit. I will try and find my Wi-Fi.
Oh, dear. All right, I'll quickly cover for you whilst you look for it. For me personally, looking at lineup, I thought, you know, I was surprised Ox was moved. Or maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but he's done really well there in the middle. Yeah, okay, it's a different team you're playing against Bayern Munich, and maybe the opposition he's come up against hasn't been quite as good with the exception of Chelsea, but he's proved himself over the last couple of games, so I didn't see why he didn't stick with that. I thought actually from the way we set up, it looked like we were going to press, and I thought that was the best thing to do, and we did that for small periods. Drew, just sort of kicking off the game, I thought first 5 minutes we looked okay. We looked, you know, to let Bayern have the ball but press them high up the pitch and try and win it back high up, and we sort of created a couple of half chances, because if you make Bayern play long, it's not something they particularly enjoy doing, particularly under Carlo this season. So were you pleased at least with the start we had?
I mean, it was encouraging. And I think when you look throughout the match, as the match progressed, that when you give Bayern space to operate and you don't pressure them, this is what happens. I think, and you see it in the Bundesliga this season, where the teams that have gotten results or at least lost with a bit of dignity, you know, Bayern's won by 2-1 scorelines a couple of times this season to much smaller sides than we are. But you have to press them, particularly the players who like to have the ball at their feet and distribute. So you have the two center backs who aren't even, you know, you have Javier Martinez and then Mats Hummels, who both like to distribute from the back. You have Manuel Neuer does the same thing. You have, you know, Thiago, Xabi Alonso. These are players who look to kick things off. And if you put them under pressure, at least enough, maybe you get the errant pass. You know, maybe you can steal possession back and hit them on the break. You know, if you give them time to rotate the ball around, to really sort of find the right avenue of attack, the right hole that we've never be left open, they're gonna cut you apart. That's exactly what happened as the match progressed. But initially I thought we're pressing, maybe this is something new from us, but then sure as shit we went right back to the usual. So
yeah, I thought it was a decent start, and I thought, yeah, if we can keep this up, you know, you have to have periods where you rest, because obviously you can't press for the entire 90 minutes against a team as good as that, but you have those sort of 10 minutes where you sit back in and sit deep again and just soak up pressure. But it's, yeah, I don't know why we didn't continue it, because it was the only sort of time we got any success in the game. Onto the first goal, because there are a lot to cover, sadly. Not a surprise, I guess. Arjen Robben, I said it before. I think I said it on the last radio show talking about this game coming up. I think I've said it on the pod last time I was on it, and other guys have talked about it. You know exactly what he's going to do every time. He cuts in on his left foot. He's going to take that shot, whether it's from distance or getting in close. There's no denying he's a very good player. And obviously the goal and the strike was absolutely out of this world. I thought it was fantastic. There's no blame for David Ospina in that. You know, I think on the commentary over here, at least, they said you could have put a check in goal as well, and neither of, you know, the pair of them together wouldn't have saved it. But how we let him and Philipp Lahm all game, to be honest, completely run down our left-hand side. But on that goal in particular, Robben came in so easily, and there was just everyone just showing him inside instead of out onto his right foot. Ellis, are you back with us?
I'm back. Am I less robot-y?
Yes.
You are less robot-y.
Cyberman.
Fantastic.
Lovely.
just talking about that first goal, what did you think about the strike itself? Was obviously amazing, but the actual defending for it, just from the left back and from the left side of our midfield?
Yeah, again, it was another issue we sort of highlighted in our previous chat when the lineup was announced about Robben cutting in. Like you say, it's what he does. Like, you know he's going to do it, but sometimes you can't stop him. But the fact that you lost, like, Gibbs and Iwobi didn't really seem to be picking anyone up there. They both lost their man. And then you've got sort of Coquelin, who I don't really know what he was trying to do there. If you think you've got someone who's so good on his left foot, and Coquelin sort of just jumps to his left-hand side and gives fucking Robben the space on his left hand side to come in on his left foot and bend one in, it's almost like he just sort of shepherded him into that position. It was a bit a bit confusing why he tried that. I'm not sure why he did that, but maybe it's the fact that two of the sort of men on the left-hand side, like I think Drew mentioned in the chat as well, as the whole left-hand side's fault is from that goal alone. Like that, no one really seemed to take any sort of initiative there. And it did seem like when we started off with the game, we had this sort of this press that we were trying to do, and it was sort of like half-hearted. It wasn't like quite a good enough press. We were sort of there, but not quite really putting a foot in or trying to challenge the player. We're just sort of next to him constantly. And it, as we saw that with the sort of the Robin goal cutting in, Coquelin sort of jolted to his left. Robin sort of came in on his left foot and curled in. And it was a good shot. It was a good technique. And like you said, Cech probably wouldn't have saved that, or any other keeper probably wouldn't have saved that, because he's finessed that into the sort of the corner there. And I thought, to be fair to Ospina, if it wasn't for him, we could have been a lot more than 5-1 at the end of the game.
Yeah,
I think he had
out of
all the players in the 11, I think Ospina was one of the guys that could probably hold his head up and say, like, I had a decent game, or at least I tried, I gave my all and all that. But yeah, it's one of the issues you have with Iwobi. We mentioned it in the chat that he doesn't necessarily track back as well as he should have done. I, for one, I think Gibbs is an all right player, but he does go walkabouts a bit, and he doesn't sometimes pick up the player when he should do. And it was hard to take, but when you have, like you say, like the player of the quality of Robin, then it's easier to take. But still, the way we defend is a bad goal to concede. But we'll go on to how poor we actually played at that time. It wasn't looking too bad. In fact, it wasn't long before we got our eventual equaliser, but still, bad goal to concede nonetheless.
Yeah, Drew, did you just want to sort of have a little bit to talk about that left-hand side in particular, not just on that goal, but throughout the match? I know you've got some thoughts on that.
Do I have to? I mean, obviously I will, but no, it's just, I mean, when the team sheet was released, the first thing I said was, you know, why isn't Welbeck starting? And, you know, he's coming back from injury. I understand you might want to risk him. I understand that too, because maybe you looked down the line and maybe the thought process is we want him in better condition for maybe whatever goes on for the rest of the league campaign. But honestly, when you look at it, Iwobi doesn't really have the greatest track record in regards to tracking back and being, not just tracking back, but being physical. After Robin's goal, you actually did see Iwobi come back and actually help Gibbs a little bit more, at least to shepherd Robin to a certain area. But there was no physicality about it. If it's Welbeck in there, we've seen Welbeck time and again, he at least uses his body constantly running. He'll put in the tackle, he'll get physical. And against Robin, who's literally made of worn down clogs, that's what you need to do. You have to be physical with him. He's made of glass. And not to go out and try to hurt him, but he can't really take a physical pounding for 90 minutes. And so why wouldn't Welbeck be the person? He's a big kid. He's got pace about him. Another option we could use on the break, you know, he's more likely to want service down the line than want the ball at his feet like Iwobi does. So it gives you a little something different. Another option, maybe hit him down that flank. Because, as you say, Lam's been overlapping the entire 90 minutes because he knew he can. And when someone that intelligent finds that amount of space down the line, you get the cross that he produced for Lewandowski's goal as a prime example. It's just that left-hand side was just, and even if you put Monreal in, you have to say that it'd be just as bad, because the rationale behind Gibbs most likely is because he has better pace than Monreal. Maybe that pace can deal with Robin a little bit better. But the problem is, Gibbs isn't as good as defending as Monreal is on average. So you have to sacrifice pace for better defending, or more pace and worse defending. And then, but either way, I think Robin would have roasted us, because he's been in excellent form this season since he's come back from injury. He's been doing it in the Bundesliga this season for them. So, I mean, he was one of the outstanding players, and it showed. So we didn't do ourselves any favors, did we? So
no, you know, that goal, just from the good start we had, I know it was only a few minutes into the game, but I was like, oh, no, not confident, but I just thought, oh, okay, we're doing all right here. And then we concede that, and it was such a seemingly obvious goal to let in. But the rest of the first half, I actually thought, as it went on, we started to play a bit better. Again, we started to press higher up the pitch, caused them a few problems. They were not giving the ball away so much, but making some riskier passes that we were sort of preying on, which led to the penalty, obviously. Just a quick yes-no from both of you guys. Was that a penalty for you, Drew?
Honestly, I'll take the not popular road and say I think it's questionable. Honestly, if you look at it, it's not that you can't argue that there wasn't contact, because there was. But if you look at body language, Lewandowski has his eyes on the ball the entire time. he goes to swing to clear it, and at the last second, Koscielny comes in to nick it, and he can't possibly stop his leg from making contact at that point in time. Contact was made, you know, the foul is given. But for me, if I'm a ref, I really have to take a second look and say, you know, maybe it's one of those incidental moments where I think this is more about interpretation from the ref rather than letter of the law, because it's just, that's not how physics works. Like, he can't possibly hold up that quickly to maybe avoid contact at that point. He doesn't see him coming at all. He's blindsided by the move that Koscielny made. So for me, I think it's a 50-50. And if anything, I would lead towards more towards it not being a penalty than actually being. But I could probably understand why it's given. I just don't agree with it.
Yeah, I when in real time when it happened and the ref pointed to the spot, I thought, wow, we got really lucky there. And then when they showed back the replay and I saw it, I was like, okay, it makes sense. But in real time, I thought there's no way that's a penalty. We've been absolutely gifted one. Ellis, was that a clear penalty for you?
No, definitely not clear. I think I at the time, like when I'm watching it in real time, I thought we're very fortunate. Obviously, when you see the replay, you sort of see Koscielny get there before he's kicked. But I think that is very fortunate for us. But at the end of the day, that's the sort of penalty that I think we get called against us previously, maybe in other matches. So I was sort of happy to get it in our favour for a change. So it was quite nice. But no, I think it was a very soft penalty, and the way we executed as well, it was a bit of a horrible moment. But we got there in the end, and sort of at half time, things are looking a bit rosy. And even after that goal, there was a chance when Mesut Ozil had a glorious chance to maybe even put us 2-1 up, but it didn't happen. And as expecting as I was of the result, not necessarily 5-1, but I thought we were going to get beat. I thought at half-time we'd done ourselves justice and it was quite good and we could be better, but it just didn't obviously materialise in the second half, as we'll probably go on to cover in a bit.
Yeah, I mean, the penalty itself, just stop Alexis taking penalties at the moment. Like, as bad as the penalty was, his control and composure to bring it down and in the box with players around him and finish was fantastic. But
he had the third attempt. He sort of had the penalty, didn't he? He scuffed the second attempt, and then the third attempt sort of fell nice to him and he placed it, which was good for him. But really, once you've had three attempts, you should at least get the one of them on target.
I was halfway to the phone to call for an ambulance at that point because it was getting me really worried. But yeah, like you, I thought at half time, we got a bit of luck. We created the chance, got the penalty, which is, even when it is a foul, you always got to get lucky and actually get the decision, which you don't always get. We certainly know that. We've had plenty of them this season. Then scoring it, and we got luck again. You know, we didn't score from the penalty, but scored the rebound. I thought, we're talking. I was not like yourself. I wasn't like, we're going to go and win the game. But I thought maybe we can get something out of this. Maybe we can get a draw. We've got the away goal. That's fantastic. And I was mildly optimistic, I suppose, into the second half. Drew, going into the second half, I think most people were like, 1-0, this is okay. Seemed to be all right. Come out second half. And the moment Laurent Koscielny goes off injured, the whole team just collapsed. What on earth is going on there?
I think it's a larger problem than just Koscielny coming off. I mean, you go into halftime at 1-1. We actually had more of the quality chances and more shots on frame than Bayern did in the first 45. So you'd have to say that, we're actually in with a shot. We could actually maybe come away with a point, maybe even more, based off of the first 45 minutes. But, again, you come out kind of soft in the second half, honestly. Bayern, when they're determined to really put you to bed, they'll do just that. And we made it easy for them. And B, Koscielny is one of the leaders in the team. He, on his day, he is an intelligent center back. He is more capable for marking, Robert Lewandowski as a prime example, or, identifying which runs to pick up and whatnot. And Gabriel does struggle with that. And part of that is because maybe he's not very good. Another part of that might be because he doesn't have a really run of games to really get back in the way of being a center back. It's difficult. But he does come off and it becomes all unglued. The communication is poor between him and Mustafi, obviously. Gabriel is, he does not hold his position quite well. And against a front line that Bayern has, they're so good with movement off the ball. You saw it when Lewandowski made that flick on touch for Thiago. Gabriel takes the bait, goes for Lewandowski without sitting there giving that split second notification to say, maybe I have to maybe see what he's doing first. I have that 1 or 2, 3 second time frame where I can identify if he's going to flick on or if he's going to control it. But he takes the immediate bait without noticing the run being made by Thiago. And then all of a sudden, that's it. done. You can't recover from that. So, you know, just Koscielny's experience was a massive loss in that regard. And I think that when he was there, I think we were doing pretty all right. I think Lewandowski was held pretty quiet, to be honest with you. So it's just, I mean, it definitely hurt. But again, more chances were coming than just through the middle. You know, the wings were an issue from deeper areas. You know, Coquelin and Xhaka weren't efficient enough in pressing. You know, like, I'll throw it out now. You and I had talked about just before we went live that Mesut Ozil had the most completed tackles in the match with 5. He had more than both Xhaca and Coquelin combined.
Can you say that again, please, Drew? Because this is amazing. I'm not. Yeah. This is by the way, chat. This is not me defending Mesut Ozil because I do not think he had a good game either. But just bring that stat out again because this is a fact.
Sure. Mesut Ozil completed 5 or 6 tackles. He had the most tackles of any Arsenal player in 90 minutes. That's not me trying to defend Mesut Ozil's performance. It's me saying that what happened to everybody else. Coquelin, Xhaka, these are players who you expect to get stuck in, especially against a team like Bayern, who can be ripe for the picking. You go in with a hard tackle, you win the ball, and then you push forward, but they just didn't do it. The pressure wasn't there. It was just zero, just the effort just was not there at any part of the park, bar Sanchez. And then, as Ella said, you know, Ospina, if he had an off day, then it's 7-1, it's 8-1. He robbed that header. He made that good save against Douglas Costa late on. That's 7-1 automatically right there if he's on an off day. So it's just issue after issue after issue. These are issues we constantly see against bigger teams. We just can't turn up. The effort isn't there. The work rate's not there. The desire's not there. The fight isn't there. And it's just, it's never going to change. Personally, at this evidence now, you'd have to say it's not going to change. And that's the bigger problem that is a whole other discussion. But yeah.
Yeah, there certainly seems to, I think mentality is a thing, obviously, people have mentioned before, and Arsene always goes on about the mental state of players. Something we'll bring up later, but we'll try and whip through the rest of the goals. We don't want to dwell on them too long because I'm sure people don't really want to remember them. But yeah, that, you know, Koscielny goes off, and I'm just looking at all the times here. So he goes off on 49 minutes, and 4 minutes later, Robert Lewandowski scores. Brilliant ball from Lahm, fantastic cross, and a very good header. Again, the left-hand side, absolutely no cover. Lahm's got acres of space. A man who is retiring at the end of the season, who on many occasions tonight I saw was the first person to a ball and just quicker to everything and more aware. And yes, obviously that has come from experience, but it also comes from desire as well. Ellis, where, you know, we've talked about the left-hand side, but would you put any blame on that goal on maybe Mustafi as well? For the fact of, I mean, I've heard so many centre-backs talk it, at least professionals, the moment a striker can see the number on the back of your shirt, you're in the wrong position. And Mustafi's completely the wrong side of Lewandowski, and he just gets the run on him, doesn't he? Oh, and Ellis is gone. Never mind, it's just me and you, Drew.
That's fine.
Ellis has run away. Right, okay, so it's just me and Drew having a... This is just like being in a WhatsApp group, so there's 300 odd people watching this live. that second goal, I mean... The left-hand side was terrible throughout the game. There was just no cover, and the midfield wasn't coming in to help when the wide men were upfield, caught upfield if we had the possession. But Mustafi at the back tonight, I thought, was really, really poor and was quite out of position a lot, in particular after Koscielny went off, which obviously will come down to, you know, partnerships and not having such a good understanding with Gabriel. But the moment that he's got the back of your shirt, that's just not good enough as a centre-back at this level.
No, sure, I agree. I don't think Mustafi was a good either. And for the person who so politely pointed out that I'm American, I shouldn't stop blaming Gabriel. I think Mustafi was also can be held accountable. The issue for me is that I think what he's doing, and this isn't the right decision, but I think he's stepping more than he should because no one else is. You know, you didn't really have Coquelin and Xhaka. Their timing when reading the play was off. So Mustafi was trying to read it. And then by extension, he was being caught out of position. And Gabriel was also being caught out of position on the zone. And then when you combine it, it's just like a perfect storm of bullshit for us to deal with. And I think, you know, when you don't have the midfield shield that you really need against a side like Bayern, those are the mistakes that are going to hurt you. It's not like you're playing, you know, for example, Sutton United, who we have in the FA Cup. You know, if it's them, you can maybe get away with mistakes. But against a team as good as Bayern, they're going to kill you off. And those mistakes at the back, the one or two ones that were at crucial moments, it hurt us. And it's just at the highest level for a club of our stature, you expect far better from your center backs, considering some of the center backs we've had throughout our history. it's just not acceptable personally.
Yeah, the next girl came. Ellis, his laptop decided to update itself halfway through the broadcast, so he will hopefully be back. But then again, if it's Microsoft or something like that, he'll probably be another 4 hours before he turns
what
on.
What you're saying is he's went on a bender and he wants to hide it.
Either that, or he has gone to hang himself, and he didn't want to do it live on air. The third goal, Thiago, who I thought was probably Bayern's best player on the night, wonderful footballer, but just oh hello, Danny's. See, look, we're trying to do live, and Danny's asking me questions in a chat. JW, you're okay with just you and Drew? Well, I mean, yes. I suppose so, Danny. But if you're talking to us, you may as well just come on and you can have a moan, because everyone in the chat definitely wants to. You want to hear Danny talk, don't you? Ping, everyone type if you wanted to come on. Just again, Gabriel, as you come on, he's coming into a game that's at full tempo at the time, and all right, it takes a little bit to adjust, but that's just not good enough. He's got no idea. You know, he's looking for offside when Lewandowski sort of turns the ball around the corner. And, you know, Thiago hasn't even gone past Mustafi at this point and sort of in between the gap and the run. And he's just got no idea what's going on, no awareness. Mustafi as well, not tracking the run, which, to be fair, I'm not sure that the midfield had passed the player onto him, which is something I do want to come on to later, the fact that some players were man-marking and others were marking zones, which is very confusing. Just, again, no awareness in the defence and just a complete lack of communication.
I think building on that point, when Koscielny comes out, all of a sudden you miss that, the rock at the back who can communicate, who can identify things. But also, on that same point, I know he's not been in the greatest form for large parts of the season, but when you're missing Petr Cech, who is still a very intelligent goalkeeper, who can still read the play from his area, he's still very good at communicating, you're also missing, because you don't really hear Ospina communicate as much as Cech, and that's not a slight against Ospina before someone jumps down my back inevitably in the chat, but there are two different types of goalkeepers. Cech has always been very vocal. He's always commanded from the back, and I think we were definitely missing that in that instance, especially when Gabriel comes on for Koscielny. Then you really have no one in the back four to really take on that role. And then Ospina doesn't take up the mantle either. If you had Cech there, then maybe you can avoid one or two of those chances. But it's just, again, sometimes I do have the question how intelligent our players actually are. People have gone on for a while saying, you know, Wenger likes the players to work things out on the pitch themselves. You know, he doesn't give a ton of direction. But has it really worked at all, ever, honestly? Very few instances. Just sometimes the players do need direction and do need, you know, to be told exactly what to do in certain scenarios. And people have brought this up for a while now, that when you have someone as your assistant manager like Steve Bould, the kind of center back he was, how are we making these mistakes in the center of the defense? So something obviously isn't right there as well. So, oh, and welcome back, Ellis. How you doing?
Oh, he's back. No, he's now, he's trying to talk and he's put himself on mute. Yeah, he's still on mute. he doesn't know. Can you hear me now?
Hey! I don't know what is worse, my performance or Arsenal's performance. I'm so sorry for everything that I've done tonight.
It's all right. You disappearing, I think, has convinced Danny to come on, which I think the people wanted to hear a Danny rant.
Oh, so, yeah, I did it on purpose.
Obviously. Yeah, yeah. Danny, there's a message in your... I just slid into your DMs, as the kids say.
Oh, here he is.
The GFP.
Oh, from the moment that I thought, oh, Ellis is gone. I've been doing shit all night. Where's your, don't you need your fucking Wi-Fi? Now he's here, you don't need me.
I've got Ethernet.
You got to stay now, Danny.
Yeah, you're here now. It's all part of the plan.
You plan to get me on. Ready, yeah. Yeah.
So, here you go. Go on, Danny. We've just done goal number three, so you can discuss. Oh, well, Cantona got the fourth goal as well. I completely forgot. Does anyone remember what happened on the fourth goal? Oh, the deflection shot. I remember. I'll put it properly, really soak in those memories. We attempted to defend a corner, and we had five attempts to head the ball out of our own box, and we couldn't do any of them. And Thiago had a shot from the edge of the box, which, again, I think Ospina was diving the right way, and it got deflection off Xhaka and went in. So, Danny, please feel free to rant, because everyone wants to hear it.
Well, it's just the same old shit, isn't it? I've been talking to people on Twitter that the debate before this was, other than the Wenger in or Wenger out, it's whether it's Ospina or whether it's Cech. I think they're both perfectly good goalkeepers, and I'm happy with either of them starting in goal. And people were saying, oh, well, if we had Cech in goal, then we would have conceded even more goals. I think tonight has proven that it's not a problem with Cech, and it's not a problem with Ospina. It's a problem with confidence. Like, I just saw that the Arsenal press conference lasted less than 3 minutes. Is that right? Am I the only person to have heard that?
That's what I read in chat. I didn't see the press conference.
I've not seen it, so people take that with a pinch of salt. And most of the time, Mark Ganella was there, head in hands, and said virtually fuck all. How can you have a press conference where you've got so much stuff to answer to, and the press conference lasted 5 minutes? I don't know if Wenger said that the team were mentally ready or mentally unready. It's going to be one of the two. They're mentally they're mentally bicurious. I think that's the only answer you're going to come up with. But looking at Thiago Alcantara, I always thought Alcantara was a type of material that you had seats made of if you had a Mark III Cortina. But apparently not. I mean, he's not even known for his goal scoring, is he? He's a midfielder. Yeah, he's a midfielder. Yeah. I'm just looking here. He scored 3 goals all season in the Bundesliga in 16 games. But I suppose that means he's no stranger to a goal. Weren't we in for him a little while ago? Yeah, just looking here. He played for Barcelona. I know I recognise the name.
Yeah, Pep signed him. Oh, did he get him to go to Bayern before he was going there? Something like that, I can't remember.
Oh, that's ridiculous. I mean, I tweeted earlier, it's really nice of Arsenal to make 47-year-old Aaron Robben with no knees looking like Ronaldo in his prime.
I mean, like I said, he's made of rotten clogs.
It's ridiculous. And just think that I know you were talking about Lahm is retiring at the end of the season. As Alonso said, he's retiring at the end of the season as well.
That might be the case. I'm not quite sure 100%.
So either of those players could walk into our team and they're both retiring at the end of the season. Lahm isn't even a right back, is he?
Yeah, he is. But he can play left back.
Well, midfielder.
No, he's right back.
He can play, according to Pep Guardiola, he can play 10 positions.
Oh, well, there you go. That's why I was getting confused. I don't watch as much German football as I used to. But I mean, yeah, like you were saying earlier, a lot of it did change as soon as Koscielny went off of the pitch. Now, people say that Koscielny, he was on an Opta rate of 6.9. They say that he isn't such a great leader. Now, I do think that if you're playing next to Koscielny, you're gonna know everything is probably going to be all right. There's been no explanation as to why Monreal wasn't playing, why Gibbs was playing there. Against Bayern, you're not really going to want Gibbs over Monreal because Monreal is the more defensive unit. He's better at it, so you'd want him. Bellerin just looked like he was having a blood test to see if he's got any Barca DNA in him, because fuck knows that's what he's going to be looking for in the next few months. Xhaka was unlucky with that shot that he had at goal, but... Mm. I mean, that one where the Alcantara, where he scored that second goal, I mean, he got an Opta rating of 9.8, 2 goals and assist, and man of the match. Players like that's just not a one-off game for players like that. They're playing in a team full of confidence. They're running away. Were they 7 points clear at the top of the Bundesliga, Drew?
They're clear enough. I think more than 7 now. But the thing is with Thiago, he's been doing this all year round. He's been arguably the best player in the Bundesliga this season. He's been doing these types of performances coming through. So I don't understand. This is part of the problem. I think we mentioned it in chat that we were talking about the Arjen Robben goal. How do you not know what Robin's going to do? He's already made his career tucking in from the left and coming along the box. But the bigger problem is it just seemed like we weren't prepared for certain players that Bayern were going to throw at us. And I think it's been a problem for a while now. Wenger might come out and say, well, we weren't prepared enough. Like, how is that? How? I can't even, like, put it into words. I can't formulate proper sentences at this point because it's frustrating. You just can't. In this day and age, there's no excuse to not look back through however much tape, DVD, whatever you need to do to know how Bayern are going to play, because as good as they are, Bayern are still under Ancelotti, and John can back me up, but they're still very rigid. They're still going to play this one system, one approach that won't change. So how do we not know what's coming, and how have we not figured out at least a halfway decent way to figure it out and defend against it? We did, as John pointed out, in the first 5 to 10 minutes when we actually pressed them when we could. And then the minute we stopped pressing, then Bayern recognized that, and then they turned on the full flow. And as someone else pointed out in the chat, Bayern weren't even at their best today. Bayern are probably, I would say, in third out of fifth gear. This isn't even the best they can play. They have not hit full stride yet, and that's worrisome. When you lose 5-1 against a team and they're borderline trying 50% of the time, that's a massive concern. So,
Very well. the chat enjoyed your rant anyway, Danny, so thank you very much for coming on.
Just looking here that our very own Goonaholic says Ospina was the best player on the by a street and we lost 5-1. That man when it comes to words, there are not many that are finer with words, and I think he summed it up perfectly there. The annoying thing is, this isn't the first time this has happened. We have regularly gone home and away places and we've got absolutely spanked by whether it's the Man United 8-2, the Chelsea, was it 6-0, was it? We've lost to Bayern before. Dortmund have done us, Barcelona have done us. And if everything, like I say every week on the podcast, if you change the stadium, the players, the coaches, the fans, everything, even the owners, and we still keep bottling it, it's got to come down to one person, hasn't it? One thing, sad as it is, and as much as Wenger has been for me, probably our one of the top three managers we've ever had, because I think George Graham doesn't get enough credit for what he did, and Herbert Chapman making Arsenal what they are. I think, so all those things have got to be taken into consideration. But it's just so sad that everybody saw this coming and everybody knows this is going to happen. And we all know deep down, maybe even not that deep down, we all know things are not going to get better. He's not going to turn it around. We're not next season going to be aiming for the title. We're not going to win the title. We're not going to win the Champions League. Maybe we might get quite far in the FA Cup unless we meet some Premier League no-hopers in the semi-final and then they can beat us.
Well, after that little cheery bit, we'll discuss the last goal. Ellis, would you like to talk us through Mr. Thomas Müller, who has been pretty bang average this season? How many goals he got up to this point, Drew? Was it three or four?
I think this was his fourth tonight in all competitions.
Yeah. So comes on, it's 4-1, and just again, just bad decision making. You're already 4-1 down. Try and have a bit of dignity. Hold on. Oxlade-Chamberlain, who I didn't think had a terrible game, to be honest. Just bad decisions, dawdling on the ball in front of her own box instead of getting rid of it. And Müller steps up and gets the goal. Just that kind of passage of play, of giving it away in a stupid position, and Müller's ease with which he scored kind of summed up the night, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I do feel bad for Oxlade-Chamberlain. I sort of mentioned it earlier how he's been doing all right in the sort of central mid positions, and he's been playing all right, and then when you get him out on the wing today and then sort of moving back in there, and he's sort of caught on the ball dawdling, sort of pissing around on the ball, it gets pinched off him, and it was just a bit of, you sort of sat there and we're thinking 4-1, fuck out, let's just end the game, like it's, we've had enough, like we're already fucked, just leave us alone. And they're just not really getting the ball out, there's no calmness there, it's just sort of calamity. And poor old Ox, he gets the ball, he doesn't really get rid of it. He sort of, like you say, dawdles on the ball, he turns around, takes too many touches, it's pinched off him, and then they're in a good position to score. And eventually the ball does go in the back of there, and you're sort of like, right, great. Like, it's 5-1 now. 4-1 was gone. 3-1 was, you had like a slight chance, and it's just got worse and worse as the game's gone on. It seems to be what happens with the Arsenal team that we've had for the last however many years. Things start to go against us, whereas other teams might just say, look, we're down now, we're losing, we'll shut up shop. There is another leg to go here. Doesn't seem to happen with Arsenal. You've got sort of the two, obviously, Koscielny's gone off injured, Gabriel's come on. You've got Mustafi and Gabriel there. Both our fullbacks are then sort of, we're 4-0 down already, 4-1 down in already, and they're pushing on, sort of leaving. They don't really have many options. The ball gets out to Oxlade-Chamberlain, and like I said, I feel sorry for him because he hasn't really got that many options. There's no one really there presenting a decent option for him, and he dawdles on the ball, gets pinched, it's back in the net, and it's now 5-1, and makes our job a lot, well, it's basically over, really, let's be honest. Like, if you can be positive, there's a few positive guys out there that think we can get through, but we're not going to get through, and it's dead, basically, this game. whether you're positive or not, it's game over, really. It's
I think sad, but true. I think at 3-1 there was not perhaps realistically, but there was a glimmer. I thought at 3-1, if we can just sort of hold on to it, then keep it to 3-1, then maybe there's a chance. But 5-1, it's obviously well gone, and the team looked beaten. To be honest, I can't even imagine what sort of side he's going to put out for that following game. Talking about the game as a whole, Drew, again, I want to come back to you. The confusion for me was at times when we were defending correctly, which wasn't, honestly, wasn't a lot of the game. But when we did double up on players out wise, that was fine. That's obviously just what you expect. Track your runner, you don't follow the ball, go with your man, that kind of thing. But the amount of times I saw Bayern, who are obviously fantastic on the ball and have got great passes, but Javi Martinez was being able to make one pass that was completely bisecting our midfield and getting to a player who could then run straight at our back four. And it seemed as if everyone in the team sort of had, right, there's your man, yeah, yeah, there's your man, you cover them, you man mark them. But the two central midfielders were covering an area and they were defending an area rather than picking men up, and they weren't passing runners on to the back four and vice versa. And again, that lack of communication there, that's something that's, we've had these problems all season long. And you would think now bringing Xhaka back in, who's got some experience against Bayern, you know, I think his last two games, he got a draw and a win against them. You know, he brings a bit more physicality and a bit more height and things like that into the midfield. He's not as mobile, but he's going to sit deeper. You know, you bring in Coquelin, who I don't think is the world's best midfielder at all. And let's be honest, this season, he looks like he's gone a little bit backwards. But they just weren't picking him up. They may as well have not been on the pitch at times. And obviously certainly weren't helped by Mesut Ozil, who again appeared to be playing up front, which is kind of confirmed by the fact the manager was saying before the game that we're essentially playing 4-4-2. It just makes no sense. Why would you play two men in midfield against a three-man midfield of Bayern Munich with the quality of players they've got there?
Well, don't ask me, but the thing is, I don't know why, I don't know why we did it, but I'm not necessarily shocked that we did, because again, this goes into preparation. And again, so whoever pointed out in the chat, it was about 5 minutes ago, that, yeah, it was Ryan Hennick, actually, said, why do you play a two-man midfield against a three-man midfield? That defies logic. Again, it's just, these are things that it goes back to preparation. You know, if you know, you can have at least a decent idea of how Bayern's going to come at you. Whether you might not be able to guess their entire 11, but you know how they're going to play. And you have to come with a way to correct that. You go in, you play either, whatever you want to call it, a 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1, whatever it was at a particular time when we had the ball, didn't have the ball, neither of those systems are going to go to Bayern and get a result against a team who, before this match, in their last 15 Champions League home matches, they're 15-0, and they scored 53 goals, allowing 8.
Yeah,
we gave ourselves zero chance to come up with a result. And that's why I was so shocked that the first 4 minutes were only down 1-1, because you knew it was just like, maybe we can actually do this. But when you're drawn 1-1 at halftime, and you know that maybe Bayern had the ability to kick on to another gear or two, you needed to make some adjustments to ensure, either to ensure the 1-1 result, or to change your approach to maybe be even more susceptible to going on the counterattack and maybe hitting them, because you know Bayern are going to press for a second, third, or fourth goal. If you know they're going to try and get more goals, why don't you switch things up at halftime and be more able to hit them on the break, because you know it's coming. You know, those overlapping runs from Alaba and Lam happened all match long from 1 to 90 minutes. So they were vulnerable on the flanks. You know, and Sanchez proved it when he burned Mats Hummels, that Hummels and Javi Martinez are not pacey center backs by any stretch of the imagination. So at the very least, why don't you bring on someone off the bench at halftime to maybe to get at them, get behind them? They're going to struggle in that regard. You know, these are changes we could make, but they're changes we never make. And whether you want to do them before the match starts or at halftime, if you don't set up to give yourself a real chance at a result, you're not going to get a result. You can't, no amount of quote unquote fighting spirit our players have, like, it's going to will your way into a result against a team as good as Bayern. It doesn't matter how much you think your team has belief in themselves. You have to give your team a chance. And Wenger didn't give us a chance, period, end of. And the players didn't respond either. Days gone by, you know, if it's a tough day at the office, some of the players might lift each other up, you know, fight for each other. We don't have that anymore either. That's another dynamic that we're missing. So it's just poor. I don't know what else you want me to say, but we didn't get
no.
Yeah.
I mean, I know obviously you're not on the radio as regular, and it's normally me doing the rants, and Chris sort of goes off for 5 minutes once I complain about everything that's wrong with the team. So I thought I'd let you have a go. Yeah, just like the whole match, the sort of difference in intelligence of things doing the. I mean, I saw Xhaka at one point go absolutely through Alonso, which was the only time I saw one of our players sort of have a, not necessarily sensible because he got booked for it, but it was a, look, stop trying to, you know, wind players up, because he was trying it with Alexis and whatever, otherwise I will go through you again. And it certainly worked because Alonso stopped after a while, but you see the difference in intelligence of players not being aware of when to foul people at the right time, whereas see someone like Philipp Lahm, who's smart enough, knows he's going to, if he gets booked, he'll miss the next leg, but doesn't let Oxlade-Chamberlain have a free run at goal, even though it's 3-1, the scoreline. You know,
yeah, but it doesn't matter because if we get a second goal in that regard, that puts Barron in a tougher position. So he sacrificed himself for the good of the team result. How many of our players would actually do that intelligently enough to know that that's what they're actually doing rather than it being a mistake? You know what I'm saying? And again, Philip Lahm is arguably one of the most intelligent footballers of the last 15 years that I've personally ever seen. So he makes a calculated decision in the moment. And that's just something we're missing. We're missing players who can be that intelligent again. We used to have it, but we haven't had it in such a long time. And that's another big issue. And I think it showed today as well.
Yeah, just disappointment all around. I mean, there's not really too much you can analyze from the game. I think the sort of resounding message, like Danny, I don't, you know, you were about as optimistic about this game as I was.
I put 4-0 Bayern.
Yeah, I mean, I think I predicted 3-1 Bayern.
Chris predicted 3-1 Arsenal.
I don't know what Chris is smoking, but I want some of it. To be honest.
Well, Chris has just gone now. He's not very well. He's had to go to bed. He is actually genuinely ill, and so that's why he couldn't do tonight.
He's gone to bed to have a little hate wank. An Alcantara hate wank. He's going to use some cloth from an old Ford Cortina. Grip.
Have you got the same sort of thing as me where, you know, I think most people probably thought we'd lose tonight, but if we'd gone out and actually performed and played decently and just got beaten by a better side, you'd be okay with it. You wouldn't be happy, obviously, you never have to lose in a game, but as long as you go out and you actually put in a performance and the players turn up and there seems to be a plan, that kind of thing. But there just wasn't at all, was there, tonight? Again, it just collapsed.
Yeah, very true. If the game would have ended at half time, we'd have gone, oh, well, not bad. 1-1 draw. We're playing really well. I think at the first half, they had 3 shots on goal. We had 5. And going into the half time, I thought, hopefully, we're going to come out second half and we're going to just continue doing that. Because as the old saying goes, they don't like it up them, do they? They're not used to people going over there and doing their best to try and score too. Oh, God, I've got the hiccups, to try and play well. But then and things started happening, and then Koscielny goes off, which is, we haven't spoke to Dom, the oracle of injuries, but I hope it isn't a reoccurrence of that thing that he's had a couple of last season where we had to keep taking him off because he had, that was it tendonitis or something of the Achilles?
Something like that, yeah.
I hope it isn't that, because it is now, I think, a couple of times this season he has had to go off recently. I don't write these things down, and I've seen so many games, I lose track of what's what. But the first half looked pretty promising. But there were so many. Why would you bring on Walcott when Giroud is there? We all know that Giroud, you bring him on, he's the battering ram. Then you just start playing long balls and he's going to go and do something. Walcott come on, run around, did nothing. Poor bloke. I mean, what do you expect Walcott to do? He's not an impact player like Giroud has become of late. And Gabriel, well, hopefully when he was coming on, I thought, right, he's been told to go out there and stick the elbow in Alcantara's face or break Lewandowski's face. Not neither that happened. He just didn't do anything. I'm surprised Welbeck didn't come on. But there again, if you know the game's gone, why are you going to risk bringing on a player that's coming back from the best part of a year out injured? Yeah. But things do need to change. Iwobi was horrendously quiet. But you are playing against one of the most dominant team in German football in living memory. And you're playing against one of the best teams in Europe, although there has been rumours.
Playing against one of the best right-backs has ever played the game as well.
And Neuer went full Neuer, or Neuer went full Steve Lord Hillwood, and then he kept everything out. So, I like you said, I wouldn't have expected to go there and get a win. If we'd have got a draw, I'd have been over the moon. But at least now, if we'd have got a draw, then we'd all be going in the home league. Oh, we can do this, you know, we can do this. We get our hopes up. Now we've saved ourselves. The arse-ache of going, we can do this. We know it's over. Fuck it. But it was just doing Olympiacos. Play Martinez in goal. You can play, I don't know, give Yaya Sanogo a game. He's back, isn't he? He might come
off.
Yeah, Arsenal
spotted goals. Him, didn't he? Yeah, in training the other day.
Well, spotted him on his own. I don't. He might be cleaning, going around with a litter picker for all we know, because fuck knows he's not doing anything else as a player. But yeah, up to the first half, I was really impressed. I thought, yeah, we're doing really well. So it does show we can do it if we want to, but then like a schoolgirl on a prom, one wonky look from the quarterback, the head boy of the school, one dodgy look, and then you fall to shit and go, that's it, I'm not going to do it anymore. That made sense in my head, but I don't think it came out the same way I was thinking about it.
I think it's more because I've spoken to you for so long, I know what you meant, but probably no one else did.
Thanks.
Right. We'll start taking some questions and stuff in chat. I see quite a few have already put some in, so I will start asking these out to our guys. Ellis, you've been the quietest lately, probably because I haven't asked you anything. But AJ something. I'm not going to try and pronounce that because, yeah, that's just terrible. Do we even try to go for it in the second leg, or do we just focus on the best finish we can in the league and trying to win the FA Cup?
That's a horrible question from AJ, let's be honest. I don't really know what to say about that question. Like, what do we do in the second leg? Like, we can't literally just, like, not send anyone, just completely forfeit it and not turn up. Like, we're going to have to play A team and decide to focus on the EPL, really. I think we're not really in the title challenge. I know it's only sort of 10 points or 9 points, whatever it is, between us and Chelsea, but still, I just think the way they've sort of performed, we're not really in it. FA Cup, obviously, if we get past Sutton, and depending on who gets knocked out of the FA Cup, it's still a viable competition that we can win. We've won it in the last 3 years twice, so we've done well in the FA Cup. It's a competition we can win in, but I don't think, I'm not even sure what, when the second leg falls into the Premier League fixtures, if there's any particular hard, does anyone know the fixtures before the second leg or after the second leg at all?
I've got a horrible feeling that it might have got one of the Premier League games Sutton got moved away, or something.
Sutton away, Southampton away has been postponed, and then Liverpool away 3 days before.
Yeah, so Liverpool away is before Bayern.
Bayern is before the Leicester match, who are backs against them with relegation.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd probably put our strongest team out against Liverpool, and then whatever, if we didn't feel like our team was fit enough for Bayern Munich, we'd rest the guys for Bayern Munich and then go back to it against Leicester in the Premier League. Like, let's be honest, 5-1, like, even the most optimistic Arsenal fan, I think, would probably struggle to say we're going to get through it. It's ridiculous. Like we said before, we've mentioned it. At 1-1 at half-time, you're feeling slightly confident that we might get a result here. Even 2-1 by the end of the 90 minutes is a decent result, considering it's Bayern Munich. Like, if you look at their team, like, we were sat there today with my friends in the pub talking about their team. It's hard to pick a weakness in their starting 11, really. Like, the only sort of one we could really pick out was Martinez, and that was only because he used to be a centre-mid and he's now coming centre-back and doing all right there. And considering the 90 minutes, he played all right in that 90 minutes. And then you look at our squad, and there's probably 3 or 4 sort of players that I'd say a lot of Arsenal fans are confident with and say they deserve to play in that position. But there's a few positions there and a few players there for the whole team that didn't really perform. Like we've said, Ospina played really well, considering he's our second choice keeper. If it wasn't for him, it could have been a lot worse than 5-1. You've got Sanchez, he had a bit of fight about him, but he's just not getting supply. And Mesut Ozil had another quiet game, and he's going to get lambasted for that. And just generally, it was a poor game. You can't really put too many people out there for having a good game, but it's over. Tie's done. Yeah, I agree with AJ. Probably focus our efforts on the Premier League if there is a slight chance, and the FA Cup, there's no point in really saving our players for that second leg because it ain't going to happen, let's be honest.
Yeah, that was from AJ Mutuchniak.
Nice one.
He's put it in phonetically for me. I've probably still said it wrong.
isn't he?
Yeah, AJ, Ryan and Mario from Full 90 Gooners. Good podcast. You should follow it.
I do listen. I'm terrible.
Well, I was on there a few weeks ago. I was on there with Jason. Oh,
I'm well out of date then. Were you on there with
Oh, yeah. I think it was Jason. Jason or Chris. It was one of the two. And Mario was there. And it was there. It was a damn fine podcast. If I don't mind, I'm going to shut up now.
Danny, as you piped up, a question from Ahmed Gadi. I will cry myself to sleep tonight. What about you?
Well, I am going to go and do the washing up after this. I shall put a bit of LBC on and listen to the wonderful Ian Collins. People go and do that. It's fantastic. And if he's talking bollocks, I shall go and put on talk radio and listen to Ian Lee. He will be talking bollocks, but it's very good. Then after that, I've watched a lot of films lately, so I might go and there's a couple of that new one, Lion. I might go and watch that.
Yeah,
I watched 3 films yesterday, 2 films the day before that. And then I shall polish the night off with a little bit of Forza Horizon 3. Hey, Ellis.
Yes.
Yeah, I've promoted Sean to be the co-leader of the group. And we've got 8 people now. If anybody out there plays Forza Horizon 3 on the Xbox 360, does it have to be Xbox 360? Does it cost any platform? Either way, go and look for hashtag ABW, A Bird Camp Wonderland, and come and join us. We're shit.
There you go. The Xbox 360. If you're a PlayStation guy, you can't get it, I'm afraid.
Did I say 360? I meant Xbox One.
Or One, yeah, whatever it is.
You know.
Welcome to ABW Forza Horizon Fan Club. Anyway, back to the football. Oh, here you go, Drew. Nice, easy one for you. One from Andy. Do you think Wenger will step down at the end of the season to protect his slowly deteriorating reputation? Nice easy one for you.
I think it's tough to say. You know how much how the club has become his life obsession. You know, he doesn't want to leave it in a negative state necessarily. You know, maybe he wants to go out on a high. You know, maybe if we win the FA Cup, maybe he'll leave. You know, I don't think we're going to win the league, obviously. Champions League is an impossibility at this point, and usually is. So I really don't know. If there's ever pressure from the board by any stretch of the imagination, maybe then he'll maybe think it's a little bit out of his hands. But it would not be – I wouldn't be shocked if he did sign an extension. I also wouldn't be surprised if he's left. Personally, I don't know. I think he should step down? I think, yes. I think he should call time after this season. Not in a disrespectful way, obviously, but I think the game has progressed to the point where I think it's out of his grasp to really be the type of manager that's required at quote-unquote top-level sides this day and age in football. I don't know another way to say it other than that, to be honest.
Yeah, it's really tough to say. There's so many questions right now circulating around the manager, and we've got a few more in chat. Another one sort of along the same lines, I'm just going to put this to all of you. Do you guys think that the team has given up on Arsene, that they've lost a little bit of faith in him? If you can, give a yes or no. Ellis first.
No, I don't. I'll elaborate slightly, just because it's not very different for the last many years. And would we have said that they've given up on him previously? No, probably not. It's the same old, isn't it? Like, no. Yeah. At least I don't think they have.
Danny?
Well, I love my mum dearly. Little movie. She's 74 and she's wonderful, but the older she gets, the more annoying she gets. She leaves things on the floor. She's got this new habit of when there's a bit of washing up to do, she'll put a little bit of water in the bottom of the cup to let it soak, not realising that when I go wheel up to the sink, I lift the cup up and pour it all over me because I didn't know that it was fucking full of water. So my point is, the older people get, the more annoying they get. So get rid of him. No, ask him politely to leave. Not there was too much respect for that. Just say, look, it's best if you buy him a chateau in France and say, yeah, here's the keys. Good luck.
I think we've bought him many chateaus in France over the years.
And probably a little douche of eau and one of them little a thing full of baguettes, a stripy jumper, some onions to go around his neck, and say, there you go. Off
so
you
basically,
go.
Danny, you're saying you don't love your mum and you should put her in a home. Is that what you're trying to say?
The other day, when you get old, dear, you are not going to come and live with me. You can fuck off. one of my cars is a Volkswagen Charan, and I said you can sleep in the back of that as long as you be quiet, because she's only 4'10", bless her. So the gist of it is, sometimes no matter how
put
great,
put arson in a nursing home is the gist.
Put arson in a Charan
with my mum,
pottering around saying, "I went invincible one season."
Would it be like a cup of tea?
Drew, another question for you here. One from Neil. Do you think Xhaka over Kanté?
I knew you were going to ask me this.
Why
are you asking me a question? You know what I'm going to say.
It's just an interesting thing. You know, there was Arsene spoke about Kanté and he tried to sign him and it was down to money. And I don't know why he's throwing Wanyama in here. He can fuck off. But, you know, Eric Bailly, who when he's been fit has been fantastic. Do you think it's part of the problems that we are having, at least for this season, is players we could have signed that we didn't and went for the slightly cheaper option?
That's literally the same money bracket that you're just spending money for. The issue I honestly think is when Wenger comes out and says, it's about money. I think that's the roundabout way of saying I don't want to spend that money on that player because I want someone else. Honestly. Because when you look at it, one of the major differences between Chelsea last season and Chelsea this season, apart from Antonio Conte coming in and doing what he does, is N'Golo Kanté has by and large been probably the best center midfielder in the Premier League this season, after being one of the best center midfielders in the Premier League last season for an entirely different club with an entirely different approach. So you have to say that the quality of Kanté was there. And should we have stumped up a couple extra million pounds to get him? Absolutely. The problem is he's not the type of player Wenger wanted. So he went out and got Granit Xhaka. And you know how I feel about Granit Xhaka as much as I watch the Bundesliga, that he has positive qualities, he has negative qualities. And for us to bring out the positive qualities in him, we have to change our approach to football. We have to change the way we set up. We have to change our tactical schematic, or else we're not going to see the best out of him. I don't even think people saw the best out of him at Gladbach for that same reason. He was very good for Gladbach. But his frailties were exposed all too frequently there as well for the reasons I just mentioned above. So no, I just think that sometimes, and I think we can all agree, when Wenger gets in his head that there are players he wants, they're pinging on the radar, he's going to focus on them, and that's it. He won't really deviate. The money was made available for him to go buy them. And I don't question Mustafi. I think he's done well whenever he's played for Germany. You know, he's done well at club level. Remember, it's still his first season in the league where it's much more pacey than Serie A, than La Liga as well. Yeah. La Liga as well. So he has to maybe adjust. Maybe if you say next season that he, you know, I thought he started well for the club, but you know, you see some mistakes he's come out with now. You see that he can be burned for pace a little bit. So if by next season he's still struggling in the same manner, then you could say, well, maybe we should have gone for somebody else. But for Xhaka, for sure, I never really wanted him. It was good that we were going after players of a higher caliber, but I think there are other players we should have gone after with that money. Just personally, I want to bring up something I think we should all talk about. Ryan actually put in a really good question before, and now I have to go up and find it. Who do you trust at the club to come up with a successful transition plan? Who knows football other than Wenger? And it's a good question for me, because when you look at other clubs, and let's use Bayern as an example because we just played them, how many football men do they have on their board in any capacity that were former players? Whether they were German internationals, whether they played for Bayern itself, so they already know the club, they know the game. They don't just know the business aspect of it. And most of the people involved in the backroom dealings with our club are businessmen. They're not football men. And you look at any successful club when they try to build something, you have Ajax, Barcelona, Bayern Munich. All these clubs have former players in the system to really steer the club in direction. But we don't have that. We have the chances. We could easily go on and tap up all of the former players Tony Adams, the Martin Keown, Thierry Henry, Patrick Vieira, all these players, you know, Robert Pires, these are all players who have expressed that they would at a time would come work for the club, but for some reason we're not trying to bring them in actively efficiently enough, or we just don't want to for whatever reason. Do you guys think, going off of Ryan's question, that we should actually be trying to be doing that, or is it a different approach we need?
For me personally, Steve has talked about this a lot as well, and it's something we've been talking about within our sort of WhatsApp groups with OBW. This is the biggest issue I've got with when Arsene leaves, is that I'm not confident that the board that's there at the moment has the right football men. And Johnny Mune also asked a question that's sort of related to it, saying about should the Arsenal board come out and clarify the manager's situation now to sort of resolve any uncertainty or fan unrest. And I think this links into it. If Arsene were to leave in the summer, the end of the season, then I don't know that the club does have a plan in place to bring in a new manager. You'd hope so, but does that mean that the manager who's coming in has been picked by Arsene? That's not something I'm particularly comfortable with. Don't get me wrong, he's the only man at the club, I think, who has anywhere near the football knowledge that would be required to make a decision like that. But yeah, I'm not sure he should be appointing his successor. And, you know, the only person on the board, like Danny will know, is Ken Fryer, really, who's now what? How old is Ken Fryer, Danny? He's got to be in his 70s.
Oh, he's got to be mid-70s. Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny. I was talking about that earlier as we were watching the game, and we were talking about Ken Fryer, and he said he remembers when he used to go in the 60s and Ken Fryer was doing the announcements at the stadium, you know, before he became the club secretary. So he's been there a long time, but he's a man who's...
Oh, he's 82.
Yeah, he's of an age where he's not realistically, you know, if anything, it's probably more of an honorary position than anything else. He's not going to have his, you know, feelers in football. So I don't know how much Gazidis really knows about the football side of the things. He's very good commercially for us, and I think he'll show more of it once Arsene's gone. But they need to bring someone in. Pires has even said that he wants to be director of football. If I was a young footballer and Robert Pires is coming and speak to me and says, "Oh, I want you to come and sign for Arsenal," that's a huge encouragement for you. Thierry Henry, Dennis Bergkamp, you spoke about Bayern Munich. Ajax are similar in the fact that how many ex-players they have at the club, and Inter Milan, Juventus do it. They have Nedved as vice president, and it's something we really need to address. And the whole Arsene leaving thing, as much as I personally do think it's his time is done and we need to change manager, I'm also terrified because I have no idea what's going to happen to the club afterwards, because I think it's not just a manager we need replacing. It's about five or six different jobs.
Yeah.
That is a very scary position to be in. Ellis, have you got any thoughts on not necessarily who, but you know, what ex-players maybe you'd like to bring in to at least advise the club in some way?
I don't know. It's so difficult. Like, we talk about, like, I'd probably agree with Danny saying out of the however many years, 10, 12 years, whatever it is, how many years it is now, the only sort of one constant is Arsene Wenger. And I personally, like we've all said, we'd like a change. But the question is what that Ryan made that really good point. Do you trust our board to pick the right person? I personally don't. Like, I don't know who they pick. They probably pick sort of a yes man who just do their bid. And you've got the likes of Stan Crokinrae, who's just basically wants someone to sort of finish fourth and get enough money in so he can fund moving his St. Louis Rams to LA Rams, which they are now. He probably wants to move them in a couple of years to somewhere else now. Like, it's difficult. Like, in terms of players or ex-players who I'd like there, there's a few. Like, you could probably pick a handful of the Invincible players to be there. Like, a lot of people would like Bergkamp to be manager, but he obviously doesn't fly, so that's something that you can't really facilitate as a manager. If someone who can't fly can't really be the manager, you probably want him as some sort of coach. In terms of sort of like the board members, you probably want someone a bit more prestigious, not necessarily in Bergkamp, someone who's been there for a few years, done it, but we don't seem to do that. Like, like Vieira has gone over to the New York team, hasn't he? We don't really have many people in there. There was obviously a bit of a shitstorm about Henri going over to Sky, even though he'd done most of his badges and training over here, and he's gone over to there. But if he's got commitments there, that's fine by him. He's now working with the Belgian team as assistant coach. It's hard to pick who you really want or who I'd really want there, but I'd like to see a good proportion of the Invincible teams to be there helping out, being football minded, liking it. But are we really going to see that? Are the likes of Stan Crokinrae, our majority of stakeholder, going to give up the position when they're getting that much money coming into them? I don't think they are. Like, we'd all probably like some sort of billionaire to come in there and take over and pump loads of money into our club. But the fact is, we've got someone in our club at the moment who is the majority stakeholder, who's quite happy with his position, is probably isn't going to sell anytime soon.
Yeah.
Just before Denny comes in, I know, I want to hear what Denny says, but I want to throw in another thing. So a couple of months ago, when the rumors came out that apparently we were tapping up Ralf Hasenhüttl to come in and replace Arsene Wenger, a lot of people were happy about that, considering how RB Leipzig have been playing this season and such. But the issue is, if you go to Germany and you ask a lot of German fans of the Bundesliga, what their actual opinion is that Hasenhüttl was actually more of a yes man than more of a genius. That it's actually Ralf Rangnick, the sporting director, that has manufactured RB Leipzig's rise. The players they've brought in was Rangnick's doing. The tactical approach, Rangnick had a large say in that, and that Hasenhüttl was brought in to be manager because he would easily go along with Rangnick's plan rather than wanting his own. So do you think that if this rumor is true, that Hasenhüttl has been targeted because we all think that Wenger will be involved in the club in some fashion when he's no longer the manager. So he goes up to the board. Do you think they want a manager who is less likely to want to go against what Wenger and the board want? They don't want maybe an independent manager like a Simeone, for example, because a lot of our fans want Simeone, but they actually want a manager who will go ahead and come in with the company line, so to speak, and follow what the current path. Do you think that's an issue? That's something I definitely wanted to hear from Danny.
Wow, that's a hard one to come to. Are you asking, this is the gist of your question, do the board want to replace Wenger? Or are they happy just to keep it going as it is?
Well, I mean, I guess when you boil down the brass tacks, do you think the board want Wenger still involved when he calls time on his managerial career? And if so, how will that affect the club moving forward in your estimation? Do you think that's good for us or bad for us as a club?
Well, going back to what Ryan said. Well, you have to split the club into two things. You've got the fans and you've got the owner. The owner bought it as an investment to make money. So the way he looks at it, he's paying Wenger £8 million a year to make him £250 million a year. And he'd be quite happy to do that. And when Wenger stops making him that money, that is that only then will maybe be looking for a new manager. But we've seen over previous years, whether it's been Owen Coyle or whether it's Martin O'Neill before that, or whether it was Simeone we were linked to, or Pep, or in fact, every manager under the sun, every year about this time when the team starts to fall apart, all the fans start talking about who we're going to get in as the next manager. But people seem to forget that the only reason Stan Kroenke bought the club is, or bought the majority shareholding of the club, was to make money from it. And, yes. And although he's not taking out his £3 million a year dividends anymore, the amount of money he put in is going up and up every year. I mean, did he leverage the club to go and buy LA Rams a new stadium, or to go and buy all? He's now the biggest private landowner in the whole of America. I mean, some of his ranches, you add them all up, and they're bigger than the whole of the UK. I did see someone that done an infographic on it, and I can't remember exactly how it went, but nothing's going to change. The only time stuff will change is when Stan wants it to, and Stan doesn't want it to change as long as Wenger is making him money, and he'll just do as little as he can to appease the fans. He doesn't care about football. You go and have a look at any of the other teams that he owns in America.
Yep. You have the Rams, you have the Colorado Avalanche and NHL. All these teams have gone by the wayside under his ownership because he cares more about the financial aspect of things. He doesn't put any pressure on anything about results. It's more about how much money he can make to leverage that team or club or institution to go on to a different financial project. And because Arsenal is now his biggest cash cow, for me personally, I think I'm convinced that he uses Arsenal against to take out loans to now
leverage
to worry about what he's been doing with the Rams, as Ellis brought up before. And when you have a chairman like that, or a majority shareholder like that, who just doesn't care about the sport, that you have a serious, serious problem.
And Usmanov is in no position to do anything about it. He can't do a hostile takeover.
They're going to freeze him out, aren't they? Right?
Usmanov doesn't even get a say. I mean, his shares are worth £100 million, maybe £200-300 million. I've got no idea.
He's selling up most of it, isn't he?
Yes, but I did it. I read here a while. There is, I think it's Tim Payton or Swiss Ramble or someone like that. He's buying into what?
But isn't he the guy? He was bringing in the guy who's now buying into Everton. I think that's apparently he's going to attempt to go in there instead now.
Yeah, he sold his shares in Arsenal and took 50% of Everton in the summer. And look at Everton. Yeah. At times, Everton are not doing too bad, and then they do terrible. But they are a club that are going to go places, especially if they get the rights to build that new stadium. Because I remember years ago in Football Manager, Everton always used to move to a new stadium. Was it King's Meadow or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Yes, that was all Kingsfield. So, nothing's going to change. And you're right, Drew. I think he does use the fact that he owns Arsenal to expand all of his other clubs, whether he's using it as leverage or whether people just go, we'll give him favourable rates of interest for the loans that he takes out. Because didn't that new stadium that they built for the LA Rams cost like $350 million?
No, it's going to eclipse $1 billion. I'm almost positive. Oh, and the thing is, when you look at how much money the club makes, Arsenal as a club, he can then go to whoever he's getting the loans from and saying, look, it's a guarantee that I will pay you back with interest because Arsenal is guaranteed to make this much money. We're always going to be making more money every year after the year before that, so I'm good for it. So,
but we'll try and obviously I know lots of people want to talk about the manager, but all that whole side of it does come into it. We'll try and just get it back to the game quickly and back to the sort of tactics. Lots of people want to talk about Francis Coquelin, so we'll try and make this the last question of the night, because Danny likes to keep us to an hour.
That died long ago. The last week's one was an hour and a half, wasn't it, with Schrader going on?
Yeah, Jace was good. Yeah, but it was nice to have Jace on. He's very good. He's much better than me.
Listen, when he gets going, you can't stop him. So,
we love Jace anymore. He goes on as you want.
So last thing, Chris is going to crucify me for this, but Francis Coquelin, everyone's favourite Arsenal player, and Chris's as well. I do not get how that guy is playing for our club anymore. Here we go. Leave the cock alone, John. I can't leave the cock alone, Matthew. I'm sorry. That sounds terrible. Not yours, Matthew. This is getting really confusing. I don't understand it. I don't understand why he's in the team anymore. When he came in and he came back from Charlton, he was really good and it was a breath of fresh air and he had that sort of tough tackling bite midfielder. But this season, he's been dreadful. He can't pass the ball. He can barely tackle at times. You saw him bounce off Eden Hazard in the Chelsea game. You saw tonight a couple of times he got spun and fell on the floor as well. I think I said to you earlier, Drew, he made, what was it, 6 passes all night long. It's just not good enough. Bayern obviously had the majority of the ball, fair enough, and they outpassed us to death by like 600 passes or something. But you can't have a guy who's playing in centre midfield only make 6 passes the entire night. It's just not good enough. And I do not understand how he consistently gets starts for this club. It's embarrassing to watch, honestly. and it's it really upsets me. Ellis, do, really? Like, do you want to? Would you like to try and defend the cock or not?
In some sort of form of defence of the cock, I'd probably say when he is alongside Cazorla, Cazorla makes him look a lot better. Without Cazorla, since whenever he got injured, Coughlan's not really the same player. He is as good as what he can do. He's good at breaking up play, making tackles, but really he needs a good quality passer range, someone of decent quality next to him. And of all the partnerships we have tried since Cazorla has been injured, no one has really seemed to be able to take that mantle with Coughlan. Like with Cazorla, Coughlan can win the ball back, give the ball to Cazorla. Cazorla can then pick out a range of players from our midfield. We're sorted. Or Cazorla, as he's so known for doing, can keep the ball, dribble past a couple of players, keep the ball at his feet, and then play it off. There isn't really anyone in our midfield that can fulfil that role, and that makes Cazorla look, Coughlan look a bit shoddy. And the fact is, we've spoken about it on numerous radio shows about this tactic of pushing Coughlan further forward and win the ball higher up. And that's all well and good, but when he does, if he does, win the ball higher up there, he's not much use because he hasn't scored a single goal for Arsenal. He's not that good. His passing range is not amazing. It's literally you can lay it off to someone who's next to him within the next however many metres, and then that's it, really. And if he doesn't make that tackle, he lunges in for a tackle. Coughlan's then halfway up the pitch, and you're left with Xhaka, who we've all got some issues with his disciplinary, lunging in for tackles because Coughlan's nowhere to be seen. So I think part of it is, for me, we had this sort of discussion previously, didn't we, on a radio show, and Chris sort of went off on one because I mentioned that Coughlan probably wouldn't get in any of the top six teams, or the top six teams wouldn't want Coughlan as a player in there. There's probably a few that might just take him, but I feel like he's good at what he does, but he's got serious limitations. And when we play games like this and the whole team doesn't perform, his limitations are probably highlighted a bit more. We sort of need the likes of Cazorla to sort of help him out and be that creative midfielder. And when you haven't got that guy there, he does look quite bad. But
yeah.
I'd say for me personally, like this, it's just my opinion. People can disagree with me. Coughlan is an average midfielder at best. He has games where he does do better than that, but there are better options out there than him. But whether Arsenal will buy him or not is a completely different thing. And we'll go into the whole discussion we just had about Crokinole and how much money we're going to put into the club. They're not going to put that amount of money into a defender from that position if they don't feel like it. And if Arsenal doesn't make that decision, then you're stuck with what you got. Obviously, Arsenal rates Coughlan high enough because he gets this many starts. And yeah. That's what we're left with, really.
What you have to consider, though, is you go back to mentioning about when Coughlan starts next to Cazorla. When you think about it, when he came back from Charlton and then we had to rely on him into that new role, how good he was. Everyone was saying, oh, he's the savior. He helped turn our season. That may be all well and good. But that was when he was given a certain set of simple tasks to complete, and that was it. That's when he was effective. And as you just said, he's a limited player.
That so season as well, Cazorla was dropped into that hole next to him. Like, if he wasn't there, would we be saying the same thing? Cazorla stayed at attacking midfielder, and there was another midfielder next to Coughlan there, would we be saying the same thing? I don't know if we would.
I agree with you 100%, and that's the other issue, is that maybe, A, he only works well with Cazorla next to him, and B, he is such a limited footballer in his abilities and his range of what he actually can do. He's turned so negative his performances when he now has taken on more responsibilities, which obviously he didn't come up with this idea himself. That clearly had to come from someone else, because... And if it came from himself, why are we not addressing it from a managerial standpoint, saying you have to go back to the simple things that we did do correctly, what you did well, and keep it there?
Yeah, because agreed.
He's doing way too much than he's actually capable of doing. It's costing us way more than what it's worth.
Right. Last bit now. Sorry, Rudy. Yeah, you are right. I'm not scapegoating Coughlan. It was just a lot of people were talking about him in the chat and they wanted to bring it up. You're correct.
Yes.
No one on the pitch really performed at all. They're all dreadful, probably bar Ospina, who, little Dave with no neck, I thought was very good in goal, which is something I don't often say, so I'll normally give him stick. I just want to give one last question and just yes or no, no long answers because we've got to wrap this up now. I saw this on Twitter and I can't remember who it was, so I'm sorry, but if someone does know, then please be
free. Petition, is it? Someone started a petition
no,
on
no,
thing.
No, no, no.
Oh, good.
I saw someone put a very interesting comment, and I just want a yes or no answer from all three of you before we wrap up. Have your opinion on Arsene Wenger one way or the other, but do you think he should come out now and say he's leaving at the end of the season to unite the fans behind him, to cheer him on, to try and get some sort of glory at the end of it? Danny?
Yes.
Drew?
Yep.
Ellis?
Maybe.
And finally, John.
Yes, I think that would be really cool. I'd he's got to go, but I'd absolutely love it if he could win a trophy. Just a fucking
FA Cup. Imagine that. He's last ever game.
Yeah, just anything.
I think the person the question is in is, maybe if he said, "Look, I'm leaving at the end of the season," that person probably might think the guys would unite and they'd fucking give a good push, like you say, and win the trophy in the end of the season. But
yeah,
this is all well and good, but will it happen? Who knows?
I'll probably get relegated.
Yeah, it would appear the majority of the chat also agree with us as well. So that's, yeah, I think we can all agree. Lots of us would like to see Arsenal go at the end of the season, but we'd also like to see him go out on a nice big high as well. There was a question from Twitter as well, from that Scorpion Kick, he asked too, but we'll just answer one very quickly. If you were Wenger, what would be the first thing you say when you enter the dressing room? Anyone? Anyone got any words? What would you say?
Goodbye.
Oh, brilliant. Well, on that note, we have been ABW Radio. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back after the game against Sutton. Is that Monday?
Is that FA Cup?
Yep. And the podcast will be back tomorrow. Danny, who is on the podcast?
Jason's hosting, and it's going to be me, Goonaholic, and Colonial Cannon.
Mr. Trinner, we
might have someone else on. Jason hasn't made his mind up yet.
Okay. Well, they'll be much more coherent than us, and we'll put words the right way around and into sentences that all make sense, and they won't go all robot-y and appear halfway through the show and disappear and things like that.
But, Whoa!
Right. Throwing some shade out there, as the kids say. Wait, I'm cool. I know all the words. But it's just time for me to say thank you to Ellis.
Right, yeah, you just slagged me off, but thanks.
Well, right, yeah, well, fuck it. Thank you, Drew, for coming on.
Thank you, anytime.
And thank you, Danny, for appearing halfway through and ranting and appeasing chat, because they all wanted to hear you talk.
And thank you, John, for hosting in the absence of our glorious pirate leader.
We love you, John.
That's all right. Don't tell Chris, he'll get upset. We have been ABW Radio. We'll be back after the FA Cup game. Make sure to look out for tomorrow's podcast. We will speak to you all very soon.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down, I will make you hurt. I wear this crown of thorns upon my liar's chair, full of broken thoughts,
I cannot repair. Beneath the stains of time, the feelings disappear. You are someone else. I am still right here. What have I become? My sweetest friend. Everyone I know goes away.